Welcome to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is the majestic finale movement of Ottorino Respighi's Pines of Rome, performed by Fritz Reiner and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. It features a massive amount of brass in the instrumentation, including an ancient Roman form of the trumpet. And today on Music for Life, we will explore the brass instruments of the orchestra and how they have been used throughout music history. In our segment, Sounds of Scripture, we will talk about the horns and trumpets of biblical times. For our Classroom Corner and Backstage Banter segments, we will talk with Dr. Carl Sievers, trumpet professor at the University of Oklahoma and principal trumpeter in the Oklahoma City Philharmonic.
Trumpet players are caricatured as egotistical, higher, louder, faster, and there's probably a lot of truth to those generalities.
He will talk about how skilled a principal trumpet player of an orchestra has to be.
You earn your money as a symphony player on those touchy, quiet entrances where you've sat there for 300 measures and come in an awkward range, and your success is if nobody notices you. And it's tough, it's demanding. And you're a solo voice, so every iota of sound you make, everybody knows.
And he will talk about his unique approach to teaching this instrument.
Essentially, it's getting the causes and the results in the right place. And I suggest that contemporary music education has that backwards.
It's a celebration of brass and a feast of trumpets on today's episode of Music for Life, titled Music with Horns. The brass are brilliant, militant, brash, and regal, often used for focal point moments in symphonic music. They are mentioned among some of the most ancient of instruments, and yet their prominence in the symphony orchestra has only been a reality of the past 200 years. Until Beethoven liberated them, they were used sparingly for only those focal points in symphonic music. But ever since Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and onward, they have been a key feature in orchestral music, particularly that of the 19th century and early 20th century, a time period where bigger meant better. So composers more commonly feature the brass section of the orchestra as a means to their musical ends. For this show, we will explore a broader scope than just the past 200 years, though. The brass instruments have been used in wonderfully diverse ways throughout standard music history and even earlier. But instead of approaching this episode in a historically chronological order, as we do sometimes, Baroque, classical, romantic, modern, we will opt for an instrument-by-instrument approach. We will discuss the French horn, the trumpet, the trombone, and the tuba. And then we will put all these instruments together to see some of the great effects achieved by composers throughout history. But before we explore each instrument, let's get into our Sounds of Scripture segment, where we survey the Bible's many references to music for a longer sweeping historical perspective on our episode's theme. This will give us a more comprehensive understanding of this subject when we explore more recent music history. In the Bible, animal horns are used as a symbol for strength. Similarly, the horns that were turned into musical instruments, as well as metallic horns, are also instruments of strength, giving off powerful sounds. As elusive as some of the instruments of the Bible are to us, the horns or trumpets of the Bible are not. Though the Bible isn't too detailed as to what the Hebrews' musical instruments were constructed from, the Bible is specific about the materials used for the two main kinds of trumpets in ancient Israel. Based on that, we have a good modern understanding of what these instruments sound like. One of these instruments is the most referenced instrument in the entire Bible. The Bible's description of heaven includes specific mention of two kinds of celestial instruments, harps and trumpets, So let's talk about the two major kinds of trumpets or musical horns mentioned in the biblical text. First is the shofar. Alfred Sendri, in his book Music in Ancient Israel, writes that the shofar is the only instrument of ancient Israel that has survived the millennia in its original form. There is little mystery surrounding this instrument, its construction, or its timbre. I actually have one sitting here on my desk right now, and I'm going to blow it for you. I had to step away from the mic a little bit so it would try to capture some of the body of that sound. You notice, actually, that it made two pitches. It can actually make a couple more than that. Some very skilled shofar players can get a little bit more variety of sound out of the instrument. The different pitches and the different blasts actually have different meanings in Jewish culture. And we'll talk about the science of why a horn, a single tube, can produce more than one pitch. There's actually a science to that. But this is the instrument, like I mentioned, that is the most referenced instrument in the entire Bible. 72 biblical references exist relating to the shofar, and a majority of them refer to alarm in battle, which is why we generally associate this instrument with sober occasions. But the shofar was actually more versatile than that, and the Bible shows it was used in even more positive occasions. In four references, it's used as a general gathering device. Isaiah 27:13 speaks of the great shofar that signals the gathering of those coming out of a future captivity. Four other times in the Hebrew Bible, the shofar is blown as a precursor to major announcements or for the purpose of grabbing attention. The psalmist Asaph recorded, "Blow up the shofar in the new moon in the time appointed on our solemn feast day," and that's in Psalm 81. This instrument here is associated with a joyful noise and the pleasant, delightful, sweet, agreeable sounds of the harp, which is mentioned in a previous verse. The shofar was blown on the new moon and carried particular meaning on the first day of the seventh month, what the Jews call Rosh Hashanah, or a holy day named after a musical instrument, the Feast of Trumpets. It symbolizes the blowing of the seventh trumpet angel as described in the New Testament, which signals the coming of the Messiah, as well as the gathering of the captives for what we commonly refer to as the Second Exodus, which can be found in Isaiah 27:13, Jeremiah 16, verses 14 to 15, and Jeremiah 23, verses 7 to 8. Three times the Hebrew word shofar in the Old Testament refers to the voice of God. Even in the New Testament, the Apostle John speaks of hearing the voice of a trumpet in a vision of God's heavenly throne room, which can be found in Revelation 1:10 and Revelation 4:1. Four times shofar is used in reference to the Feast of Trumpets. Six times it is used in the context of praise, joy, or celebrations to God. In Joshua 6:4, God commanded seven priests to blow seven trumpets, or shofars, of ram's horns. This is the one reference where the shofar's construction is described. The phrase ram's horn, the Hebrew phrase yobel keren, describes the instrument, while the Hebrew word shofar describes the sound. The word yobel is where we get our English word jubilee. This shofar was blown on the Day of Atonement to announce the Jubilee. And if you pronounce the J in Jubilee as most other languages do, it sounds like Jubilee, as it is in fact derived from Yobel. There's also interesting meaning expressed in the phrase ram's horn back in Joshua 6:5, those Hebrew words Yobel Keren, as the ram Abraham sacrificed in Genesis 22:13 was caught in a thicket by his horn, or Keren. The Jews connect the use of the ram's horn to Abraham finding an animal to sacrifice in place of his son. Thus, the horn has come to symbolize the death of a ram in place of a human. Five times, the shofar is used in reference to coronations. At Solomon's coronation, these trumpets were blown and the people shouted, "God save King Solomon." The practice of blowing trumpets and saying, "God save the king," is still practiced at British coronations. So we see this instrument being used for varying purposes, from the frightening to the festive. Psalm 98, verses 5 and 6, give us another joyous reference to the shofar and mentions another Hebrew trumpet. It says, sing unto the eternal with the harp and the voice of a psalm, with trumpets and sound of cornet, make a joyful noise before the Lord the King. Here the translators use the English cornet for the shofar, probably to distinguish it in the English from the other trumpets, which are the other main kind of trumpet described in the Bible, the silver trumpets. These silver trumpets are described in detail in Numbers 10. The Hebrew for these is chatzoserah. These trumpets are referred to 29 times in the Old Testament in both a celebratory and a military capacity. The chatzoserah is the only other instrument that the Bible gives fairly detailed information about as to its construction and material. It was to be made of one whole piece of silver and was for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps, according to Numbers 10, verse 2. It would have been long and straight, with a bell at the end. Flavius Josephus corroborates this, as does the archaeological record of similar trumpets found in neighboring cultures. The clarion and resonant tone the silver metal would have offered this instrument would have been both grand and piercing. This instrument had both joyous and sobering functions. When you blow an alarm, verses 5 and 6 read, then the camps that lie on the east part shall go forward. When you blow an alarm the second time, then the camps that lie on the south side shall take their journey. They shall blow an alarm for their journeys. Here the silver trumpets were to be used as war alarm and an organization device for the military. Verse 10 shows they were to be blown also in the day of your gladness and in your solemn days and in the beginning of your months. You shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before your God. I am the Eternal, your God. According to rabbinic sources, the silver trumpets were also blown to announce the weekly Sabbath. Numbers 31, verses 6 to 7, show this instrument's use in warfare. And Moses, it says, sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe, them, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the war, with the holy instruments and the trumpets to blow in his hand, and they warred against the Midianites as the Lord commanded Moses. This instrument served a variety of functions. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, the War Scroll of Qumran contains a document called the Rule of Battle, which sheds more light on the use of these trumpets. Alfred Sendri comments on this in his book Music in Ancient Israel. He says, this rule of battle intimates that the priests and Levites have been assigned quite an important role in the battle, namely to direct the operations of the troops in the midst of the combatants. In giving appropriate signals with trumpet and shofar blasts, they marked the different phases of the engagement. Priests and Levites as strategists, a peculiar role, though not entirely novel. It may be considered as a mere elaboration or even as a more detailed description of the older practice as found especially in, and then he gives some scriptural references, referencing Joshua's and Gideon's use of the shofar. Looking into the purely musical aspect, continuing on with a quote here, of this detailed order of battle, we realize that the priest strategists had at their disposal seven different kinds of blasts for the assembly. The advance, the attack, the ambush, the pursuit, the reassembly, and the recall. Seven different kinds of blasts, Sendri writes. He continues, such blasts must have had some conspicuous rhythmic or other characteristics without which their specific purposes could not have been recognized by the fighting men. And that ends the quote. And that could possibly be a corollary to the seven blasts of trumpet angels described in Revelation chapters 8 through 11. Trumpets, or as the King James Version translates them, cornets, are also included in the Babylonian ensemble described in Daniel 3, this ancient orchestra whose playing indicated the time to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's grand image. The Aramaic word in this passage, as this passage is in Aramaic, not Hebrew, is karna, Q-A-R-N-A, which shares similarities with the Hebrew keren, Q-E-R-E-N, for horn. We can also pair this etymology with archaeological discoveries from Babylon, which confirm the existence of cylindrical trumpets there, which were between 70 and 90 centimeters long, with gently conical ends. Another trumpet mentioned in the Hebrew Bible is found in Ezekiel 7:14. They have blown the trumpet, even to make all ready, but none goes to the battle, for my wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. The Hebrew for trumpet here is tekoa, T-E-Q-O-W-A, and it's used only here. It's not a shofar, nor a chatzoserah, the silver trumpets. Ezekiel prophesied of Israel being crippled to the point of not being able to go to battle even when someone blows this tekoa. The root for tekoa is taka and is used for blown in this verse. So they, more literally, blow the blowing implement, but none goes to battle. So many dramatic moments in biblical history are accompanied by the presence of one or both of the two major types of trumpets, though, the shofar, the ram's horn, and the chatzoserah, the silver trumpets. We already noted the ram's horn's usage at the fall of Jericho. Then there is the battle Gideon and his outnumbered 300-man army fought. The shofar was a key element in that battle, carried by each warrior. As outnumbered as they were, we can only imagine the terrifying sound that 300 ram's horns would make simultaneously. When David moved the ark into Jerusalem, the silver trumpets were blown. 1 Chronicles 16 shows that he then set up various responsibilities for the priests surrounding the ark once it had reached its resting place in Jerusalem. Verses 41 to 42 of that chapter, 1 Chronicles 16, read this way. And with them Heman and Jeduthun and the rest that were chosen who were expressed by name to give thanks to the Eternal because his mercy endures forever, and with them Heman and Jeduthun with trumpets and cymbals for those that should make a sound and with musical instruments of God, and the sons of Jeduthun were porters. When David's son Solomon was crowned king, as briefly referenced earlier, David commanded his priest and prophet to blow the shofar and say, God save King Solomon. Later, when Solomon built the first temple, he used the priests to blow silver trumpets as part of the dedication ceremony. In this case, it says he did not use just a handful of priests at a time, based on their course or their schedule for that week, but he had all the priests participate. The chronicler even records the number of priests on trumpets. 2 Chronicles 5:12 says 120 priests sounding with trumpets, and those are the silver trumpets. I would suppose that's more trumpets playing together than any modern human being has ever heard performing together. Sendri speaks of the quality of these trumpet players' performance. He writes, as the priestly Jewish trumpeters have gradually developed their technique and learned particularly how to produce additional partials, the chatzoserah might have well surmounted its initial stage as a mere signal instrument and risen into the sphere of more artistic playing. That this is not merely a surmise is evidenced by the grandiose musical performance at the dedication of Solomon's temple, in which, together with more than 400 singers and musicians, 120 priestly trumpeters have participated. Must it be assumed that the role of the 120 priestly trumpeters has been confined to the mere production of three or four natural harmonics? If we evaluate correctly the chronicler's description, it may indeed not be too far-fetched to conclude that at least some of these trumpet players have been sufficiently skilled for using their trumpets in a more elaborate way. Verses 13 to 14 show how grand this performance was. It reads, it came even to pass as the trumpeters and singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Eternal. And when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Eternal, saying, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever, that then the house was filled with a cloud, even the house of the Eternal, so that the priest could not stand to minister by reason of the cloud, for the glory of the Eternal had filled the house of God. What a powerful occasion is recorded with these hundreds of singers and 120 trumpeters. When Judah, under King Abijah, geared up for war against King Jeroboam's Israel, Abijah felt confident God was on Judah's side. He said in 2 Chronicles 13:12, God himself is with us for our captain, and his priests with sounding trumpets to cry alarm against you. O children of Israel, fight not against the Eternal God of your fathers, for you shall not prosper. Though Israel had recently seceded from the throne of David, Judah still had the Levitical priesthood, which had the blasting silver trumpets. Abijah believed those trumpets signified that God would hear their battle cries. And when Jeroboam ambushed the Jews, it says Judah cried unto the Eternal, and the priests sounded with the trumpets. And as that happened, God smote Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And that can be found in verse 15. Judah's next king, Asa, renewed the altar of the Eternal. That's what 2 Chronicles 15 verse 8 says, which was a sign of renewing Judah's covenant with God himself. Verses 14 to 15 read that they swore unto the Eternal with a loud voice and with shouting and with trumpets and with cornets. With the silver trumpets and shofar, Judah rejoiced at the oath. And the chronicler says God gave them rest round about, verse 15. Here the restoration of music accompanied the restoration of religion. This is the first of several accounts where this happened in post-Davidic Judah. Later, under King Jehoshaphat, 2 Chronicles 20 shows how God saved Judah from an enemy alliance. And this was the battle where the musicians went into the front lines and performed music, evoking a miraculous reaction from their God. After collecting the spoils from this battle, the Jewish armies returned to Jerusalem with great joy. It says, "For the Eternal has made them rejoice over their enemies, and they came to Jerusalem with psalteries and harps and trumpets unto the house of the Eternal." 2 Chronicles 20, verses 27 to 28. We now see trumpets being used not just in a signaling capacity, as was the case in those examples under Abijah and Asa, but in a formal musical function now for the temple service. According to 2 Chronicles 23, verses 12 to 13, silver trumpets were part of the music education program that Jehoiada the priest had set up just before the reign of Joash, and these trumpeters contributed to the coronation of this young king. In King Hezekiah's temple restoration, he used the priests with the trumpets. It says, "And that the song of the Eternal began also with the trumpets and with the instruments ordained by David, king of Israel," which can also be found in 2 Chronicles 29, 27. Verses 28 and 29 read, "And all the congregation worshipped, and the singers sang, and the trumpeters sounded. And all this continued until the burnt offering was finished. And when they had made an end of offering, the king and all that were present with him bowed themselves and worshipped." Further along in history, when Zerubbabel laid the foundation for the second temple, Ezra writes that when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Eternal, they set the priests in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals to praise the Eternal after the ordinance of David, king of Israel. Not only was the musical service established after the ordinance of David, but the trumpeter priests had the appropriate uniform or apparel for this service. A little later, when Nehemiah had Jerusalem's newly finished wall dedicated, Nehemiah records certain of the priest's sons with trumpets, and he gives the name of one descendant of Asaph, that illustrious musician of David's time. Even in the New Testament, the blast of a heavenly trumpet is used to herald significant events, namely a resurrection, as detailed in 1 Corinthians 15, and the return of Jesus Christ, as described in Revelation 11:15. Jews and Christians alike might be interested to see the parallels between those New Testament verses and a psalm in the Old Testament. Psalm 47 talks about the Messiah's coming with the sound of a trumpet blast, described in verse 5 as that of a shofar. It describes his earthwide kingship in verses 7 through 9 and admonishes us to sing praises unto our King. This has been Sounds of Scripture. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music with Horns. We are exploring the brass instruments of the orchestra, how they've been used throughout music history, and some of the great moments in the standard repertoire for these horns. Today, instead of going era by era, through our discussion of the standard music repertoire, we are going instrument by instrument through each of the four major brass instruments, trumpet, trombone, tuba, and to start with here, French horn. Before we do that, I should explain some of the basic technology of how pitches are created on these instruments. The lips are buzzed together into a mouthpiece. Kind of like that. But going through the mouthpiece and then into the brass, it makes a much more beautiful tone. By changing the tightness or looseness of the embouchure, those muscles around the mouth, the performer can change the pitch coming through the horn. And by horn, I mean any brass instrument. Now, due to their simple form, early brass instruments were not highly versatile. Because the tubes were a set length, the instruments were only capable of playing in one key. Now, that doesn't mean just one note, but a series of notes within a key. Within this one key, they could only play notes within what is called the overtone series. We've talked briefly about the science of that in a previous episode. When it comes to a brass instrument, when air passes through it, the sound waves vibrate at certain frequencies based on how long or short the tubes are. The lowest possible note on a brass instrument without any valves, just a simple tube, for lack of a better term, is known as the fundamental. But by changing the flow of air pressure, the player can make the sound waves vibrate twice as fast as the fundamental, three times as fast, four times as fast, and so on, which gives a small variety of pitches in this overtone series, like a series of musical stepping stones across a pond. The second note is exactly one octave above the fundamental, the next one after that a perfect fifth higher than that, and then the next one a perfect fourth, and so on. If a player wanted to play notes not in that overtone series, he or she would have to pick up another instrument of different length. In the 17th century, however, additional tubing was created to change the pitch of the instrument. These were called crooks, and they were inserted onto the instruments to change their length. But eventually, about the beginning of the 19th century, valves were added, changing the space inside the horn, which meant, in addition to the lip muscles changing the pitches along the overtone series, the valves allowed for other series of pitches to be made on these instruments. That meant the modern manifestations of these instruments can create any pitch required of them in the score without having to switch to a differently tuned horn. So let's talk now about the first brass instrument that we'll discuss today, the French horn. The French horn, as we know it today and as it has developed from the horn used by hunters, contains about 12 feet of tubing that's coiled into a circular shape. Why is it called a French horn? That's really an American convention. Some thought that calling this instrument the horn was too generic and ambiguous of a term, since the word horn could refer to many wind instruments. It is generally believed that the French may have been the first to introduce the horn to the orchestra, so the Americans started calling it the French horn. In the orchestra, the horn section is used for a variety of tonal colors, from mellow and warm to majestic and even brash. It is featured in Sergei Prokofiev's orchestral work, Peter and the Wolf. In this work, which includes a narrator, Prokofiev introduces the listener through this children's story to the different instruments of the orchestra. For the bird, duck, cat, and grandfather, Prokofiev uses solo wind instruments to depict each of these, and the narrator tells us that that's what they depict. But for Peter, he uses an entire string section, and for the wolf, he uses a horn section. Instead of creating the mellow effects that sometimes are generated by the horns, they are used here in a more sinister way.
Thank you.
Let's hear an example of a horn soloist. Here is one of four concertos written by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart for the French horn. This is the third movement of the Concerto No. 3 in E flat, Kirchhoff 447, performed by Alan Civil, the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, with conductor Sir Neville Mariner. That was hornist Alan Civil with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields with conductor Sir Neville Mariner. That was the third movement of Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 3 in E-flat K447. And it was an example of the French horn used in a solo capacity. With each of these brass instruments today, I also want to play an example of these instruments used as an entire section. So here's a famous horn section moment in music history. This is the middle of the third movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 3. This symphony is nicknamed Eroica, or the Heroic Symphony. And what better way to embody heroism than through the use of these versatile brass instruments? So here's this middle section that I'll play, and then I'll let it go to the very end of this third movement. Thank you. That is Music for Life, and you are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music with Horns. We are exploring the brass instruments of the orchestra, how they've been used throughout music history, and some of these great moments in the standard repertoire for the horns. That was John Elliott Gardiner conducting the Orchestre Révolutionnaire et Romantique in an excerpt of the third movement of Beethoven's heroic Third Symphony. And it was an example of the regal effects possible by the French horn section of the orchestra. Now let's move on to the next instrument we'll discuss from the brass family, the trumpet. We've already discussed a great deal of this instrument's history in our Sounds of Scripture segment. Like the early French horn, the early trumpet did not have valves and therefore could only produce a set number of tones within a specific series known as the overtone series. But that since has changed with the convention of the valves, which change the size of the tubing and therefore the pitches possible. The trumpet is the highest instrument of the brass family, creating a brilliant, resonant, and piercing tone. While this is one of the smaller brass instruments, it contains around 6.5 feet of tubing. One piece that made the trumpet famous among those alive today, I guess you could say, was a rondo by the Baroque composer Jean-Joseph Mouret, used in the Masterpiece Theater television series. Here it is performed by Wynton Marsalis. This is from the Essential Wynton Marsalis album. So that is Jean-Joseph Mouret's Rondo, performed by trumpeter Wynton Marsalis, and that's an example, a famous example, of a solo trumpet piece. I also want to play you another great moment in the trumpet repertoire, and it's actually from the vocal literature. This is from an oratorio by George Frideric Handel called Samson. This is Let the Bright Seraphim. It's performed by Kathleen Battle, soprano, with again Wynton Marsalis on trumpet. This is a remarkable recording. You'll hear the three-part format of the work, an A section, then a contrasting B section, and then a repeat of the A section. Except that in the Baroque era, when the A section was repeated, the performers added more ornaments. They improvised a little more to add variety, and this is quite the ornate repeated A section. Enjoy Let the Bright Seraphim from Handel's Samson.
Thank you.
That was Let the Bright Seraphim from Samson by G.F. Handel. That was performed by soprano Kathleen Battle and trumpeter Wynton Marsalis. And it was an example of a solo trumpet player featured alongside a vocalist. It was an example also from the Baroque era. That piece, plus the Moray Rondo that we heard earlier, the Masterpiece Theater theme, are two great examples of trumpet writing from this time period. We also heard at the end of our Sounds of Scripture segment a snippet of The Trumpet Shall Sound from the Baroque era masterpiece Messiah, also by G.F. Handel. Here's another brief excerpt from the Baroque era from its great representative J.S. Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach. This is more trumpet writing along with another vocal work. In this case, it's along with a chorus. This is the end of the chorus Cum Sancto Spiritu from Bach's B minor Mass, which features some acrobatic trumpet playing right at the end. That's the part I'm going to play for you. And it's another great example of the regal kind of trumpet writing from the Baroque era. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. That was some regal trumpet writing from the Baroque era by Johann Sebastian Bach. We're talking about brass instruments on today's episodes. We're introducing each instrument at a time, French horn, trumpet, trombone, and tuba, in a solo capacity and then in a sectional capacity. Let's hear an example now of a trumpet section. One of the more famous trumpet section moments is in an opera by Giuseppe Verdi. This is the triumphal march from Act 2, Scene 2 of Aida. The Egyptian people sing a song of victory to their king about his victorious army and the victorious captain Radames. Listen for the famous melody brought by the trumpet section.
Thank you.
That was Eric Leinsdorf and the London Symphony Orchestra performing an excerpt from Act 2, Scene 2 of Giuseppe Verdi's opera Aida, and that has a very famous melody with a trumpet section playing the melody. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music with Horns. We are exploring the brass instruments of the orchestra, how they've been used throughout music history, and some of the great moments in the standard repertoire for these horns. We're talking about the French horn, the trumpet, the trombone, and the tuba. We're talking about great solo moments for these instruments, and also great moments where they're used as a section in the orchestra. And so we've done this with the French horn and the trumpet so far. When we come back, we'll talk about the trombone and tuba, great moments from repertoire written for them, and then we'll put all the brass back together for some powerful demonstrations of the power of this section of the orchestra. And also, right when we come back, since we're still in the trumpet section of our episode, we will talk with a brass player from the local Philharmonic who is also a groundbreaking educator, particularly in the field of trumpet playing. You won't want to miss that. You're listening to Music for Life. We'll be right back.